Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, depending on what time zone you're in. Hello. My name is Noel Ward. I'm the Managing Director at Brimstone Hill Associates, and I welcome you to the live printing, package printing and printing impressions webinar, Expanded Color Gamut and Other Packaging Trends. It's sponsored today by Sun Chemical, and thank you very much, Sun Chemical, for doing that. And I'll be hosting this event today. Now, we're going to do this a little differently. A lot of these sessions, we give you some PowerPoint presentations and somebody talks for a while, and then we do a Q&A. But instead of that, instead of doing that set of presentations, today's webinar is going to be more of a roundtable discussion about what a bigger color gamut means to your business and what you need to know to leverage the power of more color into an advantage for your customers. And I'll be introducing the panel in just a minute, but we're going to do some technology pointers and some housekeeping ahead of time. So a few quick tips on how to make the most out of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console. It's marked with a question mark. Or you can let us know in the via the ask a question box. You can also use the ask a question box to submit your questions to today's panelists, and you can send them in at any time. We'll be taking those in as we go, and we'll keeping them in stock until we get to the end where we can ask the questions. Now, please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers that are on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets in the console. Sometimes the pop-up blockers in some browsers get in the way. And to find out what the widgets at the bottom of the screen do, click on the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your experience today. So now we're going to introduce the webinar speakers. I'm welcoming today four different guys who are going to bring a great perspective to this and add a lot of value to this presentation. First up is Lou Iavoli. He's the VP of Strategic Partnerships and Marketing at Hammer Packaging. That's in Rochester, New York. Stephen Miller is a market manager at X-Rite and Pantone. Pete Rivard is a principal instructor for printing technology at Dunwoody College of Technology in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Kevin Borquin is pre-press manager at CyberGraphics in Memphis, Tennessee. So with these guys, they're going to bring a lot of color and packaging knowledge and experience to the stage today, and I hope you'll get a lot out of it. So let's get started. We'll go on to the first question here, and I'm going to field the questions, and these guys are going to answer them one after another. And they'll be jumping back in and forth. You'll get a great discussion going, and hopefully you'll gain a lot out of this. So we're going to start off. What is the state of the art in color gamut for package printing today, and where is the typical package printer in relationship to it?
So, Noel, this is Pete from Dunwoody, and I'm gonna come at this from the standpoint of flexographic package printing and also a little bit of digital. But what we see happening in flexography is competition with some of the more recent digital devices is causing flexographic printers to rethink how they print and think about shorter runs, quicker changeovers. And what that means is if they can figure out a way to have to stop cleaning as many ink stations and maybe start moving away from Pantone colors and into more creative ways to mix the two Pantone colors, then they're going with that. So we're seeing the addition of red, green, blue, orange inks with the CMYK ink set for the purpose of making sure that you can, you know, dial off one run and get right onto the next one as quickly as possible and still produce those Pantone colors. And some of the recent innovations in press technology where they're using servo motors instead of gears and high-def flexo plates are giving us opportunities to print light tints and print flat values with a lot less evidence of the mechanics of the press run itself sort of interfering with the color.
Okay, great answer. Anyone else want to add into that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say this is Lou from Hammer Packaging. I would just say that the concepts that Norm just kind of walked through really apply not just to flexoverse digital, but really any press technology that you look at, whether it's offset or gravure. The sell point that a lot of the manufacturers of digital technology will give you is that, well, the press may not run as quickly as a traditional flexo press or servo-driven newer flexo press, runs, the uptime is greater because you don't have those make readies. So when you look at a press manufacturer that's trying to compete with that shorter run type of market in any of the press formats, you know, their objective is always how do we minimize the amount of make ready and changeover time. So it really goes across all platforms from a printer's perspective.
Yeah, Noel, if I could add, this is Steve. Just one of the benefits for extended gamut printing is really seeing the advantage of being able to gang like jobs. So if you've got a whole like series of a product family that you're trying to print and offset litho, then they've been running extended gamut for quite some time. So really get the benefits of, you know, being able to gang, say, a sour cream and onion, the barbecue, and a regular flavored, you know, set of chips or cookies or whatever it may be up on a single press run. So you get yield without having to have three concurrent press runs at one time.
And to jump on top of what Steve was saying, this is Kevin Borkman at CyberGraphics. Different technologies have kind of emerged together, kind of getting us to that tipping point where we're putting a lot of pressure on each part of the system to perform at a level we've never expected it to perform at. And if you look at what we've always, as flexo printers, not been great at, it's printing solids and screens on the same plate. And so we've had to force ourselves with better analog technology to have thinner ink films, but still rely on flat top technology and other technologies to help enhance laydown while still getting our highlight dots to print consistent over those press runs. And by comboing jobs together, yes, you are running shorter runs of individual packaging, but since you're not stepping the job out across the web, your press runs do become a little bit longer, so you have to have that consistency to meet the brand owner's expectations of matching their brand colors, which they have always had done with line colors.
Okay, the brand colors is something we're going to get into later, because that's a really important topic to delve into, because we all know how important making sure those brand colors are to a lot of companies. So in the context of what you said in terms of what you've all just said, what are some of the things you find customers are really looking for? Or maybe it's more, what are customers expecting when they come to you?
Well, this is Lou from Hammer. I was going to say it depends what you mean by a customer and which department at that client. If you're talking to a marketing group, they're going to talk to you about how their package is interactive with the end user that's picking it up and holding it and reading it and, you know, using it. If you're talking to a procurement group, they're going to talk about what are the efficiencies that can be gained in the way that you approach running this particular family of items so that they can have the best logistics, you know, the shortest run quantities, the least amount of inventories, all at the best possible economics. So, you know, sometimes there's different reasons for wanting to do this, and it really depends what you mean by customer.
Pete Rivard again. My customers are the people who hire my students. And what are they looking for? They're looking for students that understand spectrophotometry, lab profiling, and also lean manufacturing techniques, all of which support the whole idea of expanded gamut printing and faster changeovers.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the supermarket and the consumer doesn't go to that aisle to buy your package, there's a moment of truth where you've got the ability to attract their attention, and marketers of these brand owners believe that sales through packaging, what jumps off on the shelf, what looks good, what's consistent, is what really captures their attention. And so what we have to deliver as flexographers has to jump off the shelf and has to push the limits of what designers can do on the screen that can be produced with Flexo. And a lot of the brand owners, not only do they want the vibrant color, but they want it done consistently. They want their brand color to be the same print run after print run after print run, and they want three different packages run side by side to match what the brand owner has put as the standard, so we ensure that we're delivering on exactly what they designed on the front end as their marketing vision. This is what I want to communicate to the customer through my package.
Well, that ties in directly to the next question I was going to ask, because most of the things you're packaging, we're looking at the stuff that's on the shelf at the local supermarket. So in that context to what you just said, Kevin, and looking at the shelves in the local market, how important is being able to take advantage of a bigger color gamut?
I mean, I think it's extremely important to capture that customer's attention. So when you wear in their store shelf and they're making a split-second decision, that's what's going to draw them into your package. Because if they didn't come there for your product, there is only a small window. But I think what other technology extended gamut allows you to do is to put different products on the store shelf next to each other, keep the look consistent, still deliver the color, and do it time and time again, and having less cash tied up in the inventory chain.
Pete Rivard again. I think too, when a lot of people think of expanded gamut, they're always thinking about bright primaries and vivid saturated colors, Noel. And I think you know when you get into packaging, you get into pharmaceuticals and beauty products, and they're more into the pastels, and the addition of those additional inks give you the ability to deliver violets and mint greens and the kind of colors that always look gray and disappointing if you're doing them in CMYK, and really don't differentiate very well. But in an expanded gamut printing, that restores a lot of hue possibilities down in the lighter tones, which are crucial, you know, for certain market segments.
Well, it lets you take on more of a customer's needs. You can do more for a given customer, or they might have to go to some other method of printing, or might have to go to a different print provider.
You bet, or kick back to a Pantone color, you know, to achieve that light pastel purple or orange or what have you.
I think Lou touched on it earlier, right? We're providing the brand owner, which really are two different personas, right, with choice. If the procurement guys are driving the project and you're a retail brand, you might be looking for cost savings and ways to pass the cost on to the end customer in a more efficient manufacturing process. So then you're ganging, you know, different types of labels up on a single press run at the cheapest cost possible versus always just assuming that it's for the most, you know, brightest and vibrant colors possible. So it really opens up a lot of opportunities for a printer to provide these services to their end customer.
I mean, Norm, this is Lou. I agree with, in both respects, with Kevin and Pete on this, and that at Hammer, we're printing on multiple formats. So, you know, we print offset, sheet-fed offset, and roll-to-sheet offset. So we've had a lot of experience using expanded gamut. We also have web offset, and we have Flexo. And sometimes I think as a provider of that converting technology to these end users, it's our responsibility to share with the clients, you know, what their options are and what the pros and cons of each one is. And when you look at a comment, Pete used a great example of it's cosmetics. You know, if we were working with a client that was in the health and beauty aid market and they had a very limited number of SKUs and they decided that they wanted this to be a super premium look and they wanted cold foil and some other things that were included in it, well, you know, obviously – expanded gamut doesn't necessarily fit the audience that they're trying to reach. So, you know, the best option for them is not to go down that path. But, you know, Kevin and I were talking a little bit earlier and talking about flexible packaging and something that might be very high volume food-based packaging that has 25 different SKUs that fall in the exact same format of a package. Well, yeah, you can make each one of those 25 look incredibly unique and offer all these value-added things onto the package, but you also can offer them the option of saying, well, if we design with expanded gamut in mind, here are the advantages and disadvantages of doing it that way. So really our responsibility from a converting standpoint is to just let our clients understand the technologies and give them their choices. At the end of the day, it's up to their marketing groups to decide what they feel will allow that consumer to pick up their package.
Sure. And you know, as in so many other things with any type of printing, it's really helping the customer understand what they can and can't do and what how the different technologies will really serve their needs.
I think for us, some of the biggest challenges we have is that our customers just – they don't understand it, and they think that it's not going to give them what they're expecting. So it's really an education process for us to help them. You know, in most cases, we have to prove it. Give us a file. We'll separate it out using the latest technology that we have here at Hammer. We'll generate proofs. We'll send it to you so you can see what it's going to look like. But usually they don't believe it.
Yeah. And I think it's also allowed us to achieve – better graphics through this process because we're doing stuff that we would have never been able to do by printing conventional CMYK and spot colors.
So you're talking about the process images.
Images. You know, before we would have to split out a spot color, we have to run a screen as one deck and a solid on another deck, and we lose a deck in the press. We would have to make a sacrifice. Do I want my brand color to match the best and not print a nice screen, or do you print a nice screen and not necessarily match perfect on the brand color? Now, because we're designing with extended gamut in mind and executing on the graphics with extended gamut, we don't have to make those decisions anymore. There's a lot more we can do. Using the same seven inks, we've got more choices in how to tackle certain problems that help that product fit better in the marketing vision of the brand owner, but still execute easily, consistently, repeatable from the printer side of view.
It's like having a cool new tool in your toolbox. I mean, it really is a huge help.
Okay. Well, that brings me to – I'm going to skip around a couple of questions I was thinking about in the sequence we originally had, but – bring you this one up because this one sort of ties into what you're just saying. What are a couple of the things that package printers need to be thinking about with respect to this wider color gamut that we have now? You just touched on a couple of those, but anyone else jump in on this? What are some of the important things you really need to be thinking about that you have to educate your customer about so they understand what they're getting and know where the advantages and where the limitations are?
So what we like to say is 7-color, all it really is a single set of inks, a single ink system, and a willingness to embrace process control. So this is not successful if you don't have those things. You have to keep your inks consistent, you have to deliver those inks consistently, and you have to manage process control. And when we talk about managing process control, it's no longer good enough to just measure ink density, dot gain. You're taking process control to a whole other level, from press condition to analog condition to blade condition. We're monitoring everything to keep that system in tune, repeatable. That way, when you get on press with different jobs at different times, you know they're going to match what you set up as your standard when you began the process.
Yeah, this is Steve. I would second that. I mean, really, you can't manage what you don't measure. And a lot of printers, I think, try to tackle extended gamut, to run a couple trials. And as Kevin noted, right, they kind of keep some habits of old, and they're not happy with the results. And, of course, you have to increase the amount of measurements you're taking across the whole process from start to finish, track it, audit it, record it, look back at the data, try to understand where you can improve. I think Kevin touched on it earlier, maybe it was Lou, that there's been incremental improvement over the years that continue to refine the process, and that's what's delivering some of the quality that we see today in the market.
Norm, from a Hammer perspective, just to give an example of what these two guys just said, you know, we have gone and been successful at G7 certification at Hammer, and, you know, as Kevin was alluding to, you're taking a particular piece of equipment and creating a common condition, which would be what ink system are we using, what exact material are we printing, and you're identifying that press with all these conditions. You're sending it to a third-party organization who's analyzing the data, sending it back to you, and then you're doing a second confirming run of that exact same condition, and for each particular condition that you run on that particular piece of equipment, you have to go through a certification process so that your data is predictable. And when your pre-press department, which has all these great tools to help you do this extended gamut, goes to generate a proof, that proof is truly representative of the condition that you've gathered this data on your particular piece of equipment. Because, you know, you go all the way back to Pete, who's an instructor, sending these young kids up to us who are these future pressmen. And, you know, the days of us shooting film and understanding, you know, what order plates and colors we're going to print in a particular press, I mean, all that happens much faster now, and that data is sitting right there, and these guys got to understand it, and they got to be able to hit that proof every single time because they're not printing just one item anymore. On a sheet-fed press, they might have 24 different images all sitting on a layout, and they all have to match their 24 different proofs, and it's all done with extended gamut. So the data becomes critical. It's your eyes.
There is that relationship with the contract proof, though, that you guys brought up, too. And quite often, because of budget considerations, the contract proof is an inkjet proof these days that is going to be made from anywhere from, say, 6 colors to 12 colors that don't map exactly, you know, to the inks that you're using on press. So, again, you know, another touch point that has to be very well controlled, because the file that made the proof is not, you know, the same file that's being ripped and sent off to make the plates. And that's a very, again, it begs excruciatingly tight process control and a thorough grounding in spectrophotometry and color management.
Okay. Let me take a question now from the audience. So we just got this one in from Kirk Horbeck. And it ties into what we're talking about, because we've been talking about the inks on the press and how we have to make sure that the people that we're going to be proofing that correctly. But the other side of this is what the substrate is, because how your ink looks varies with your substrate. So the question is, how does a panel see the explosion of various new substrates, such as foils and plastics, and lower production costs for UV impacting the market demands? So how are we factoring all the different substrates in? What does that do to your workflow?
Well, obviously, with these different substrates, now we bring in an opaque white into the situation, and then, you know, do you have a proofing system that can actually output, you know, a foil substrate or a clear substrate with an opaque white on top of that, and then colorant on top of that? So, I think that question really is a very standard situation that's run into in most Flexo operations, and the only real new wrinkle is it's cheaper to print UV these days, and UV gives you higher ink densities, which then, you know, kind of plays into the whole idea of successful expanded gamut printing.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, as was touched on earlier, this becomes another print condition.
Right.
And if you look at where extended gamut has come in the last 10 years, you know, when we started this in 2004, 2005, proofing was horrible. We couldn't come near as close as we'd like to come to a proof that the brand owners demanded. But you look at where we sit today, we've got many inkjet devices that have a large enough gamut to achieve what we need to proof on paper. And newer companies are developing inkjet devices that can proof on the foils, can proof on the films, can proof with white inks, can proof with metallic inks that have the gamut that you would need to match an extended gamut system. So we've come leaps and bounds. You know, we can talk about press technology, and that's come along the way, but proofing technology by far has probably been the biggest thing that has changed in the last 10 years that's enabled us to be successful at this.
And you know, from our perspective, this is Lou from Hammer. I mean, you got to look at the opportunity that's in front of you, and, you know, we have to make some business decisions because it's all about calibration. And if we're going to pursue an extended gamut approach on a film-based material, and it's not one that we've created a common condition for and gathered that data and verified that data, then we have to make a business decision to say, is this material going to be a part of our portfolio of materials that we offer on an ongoing basis, that we want to take that material and put it through that process so that we can create the condition for it? Because everything's got to calibrate. You know, like Kevin's saying, your proofing system to the particular press, to each particular press you're going to run on, in your processes internally, your quality management system, it all has to make sure that you don't just do this process once in 2013 and then decide, oh, yeah, I'm going to go back in 2017 and recalibrate everything. I mean, it's a process that you got to be diligent to, and you have to constantly go back and calibrate with, because it all has to work together.
Okay, we have another audience question coming in here, and this one's kind of interesting. This one's from Erica Morrison. I'll push it up to the slide area. There it comes. We've talked about the benefits of expanded gamut printing. What are the limitations that you're seeing, and how will the industry overcome these in the coming years? I mean, some of this is probably something Steve thinks a lot about it, at where he works, and maybe you can talk about that, Steve, and everyone else can jump in on it as well. What are the limitations, and how do we think we'll overcome some of these?
Yeah, I think some of the limitations I think Kevin touched on earlier, there was for many years difficulty in simulating the effects of building, whether it was a halftone flat screen area or even within the image itself, you know, the proof to press match, once the image was halftoned, you could see some color shift and it would be isolated. One of the other challenges early on, especially for the Flexo assess, was managing your angle combinations. Most of the extended gamut printing started in commercial with stochastic printing, where if you ran a three-color combination, you didn't have to worry about moiré. So there's been incremental improvements there. Also with the Flexo plates, we've seen improvements to come. So I think some of the challenges, things that we're looking at into the future as far as trying to find ways to help our customers manage the process is quicker access to the data, quicker access and ease of measurement, especially now when, as I heard, you know, the panelists talk about, there's very quick turns required, 24 items up on a single sheet. How do you guarantee that all 24 are in line with what your customer's expectations are? I think we're starting to try to have to move beyond just a single set of patches or color control targets and look at ways to improve the measurement coverage and then the data that's collected out of it and how it's analyzed as we go forward in time to allow these type of printing processes to grow.
Yeah, if you look at add on top of what Steve, and for Flexo, it's round. So we constantly are building ways to do the stuff with flat plates. And if you look at where the business of Flexo, where it's stealing market share from, it's the gravure packages that have no butt joints. And to do this in a way where we can take the graphics, make it round, have the same consistency we get with, you know, a flat top dot and HD technology, we need to be able to transition this to a round technology, which to date has been extremely expensive, not as consistent. The delivery times on the sleeves are less than what we are crazy long, and you really want to take this system and do it at the same economic value that you can currently do with flat plates.
You know, Noel, apropos to how the industry overcoming some of the other issues in the coming years, I mean, one of the things that I've seen this week that I think is really interesting is the whole idea of a variable laser die cutting. So doing inline die cutting at the end of the press with a laser instead of a blade, which would then, you know, give people some options in terms of putting decisions off on what they're going to gang until the last minute, because then they don't have to, you know, send out and have a physical die created. So that's coming on, and I don't know, you know, where the industry is in terms of awareness of that, but it struck me right away that that would be a really cool tool to have in your kit in terms of just deferring decisions on ganging and multi-up running.
Yeah, it's another dimension that we don't, a lot of label folks aren't really thinking about yet because it's to some extent it's kind of new and it's a little pricey to get into, but it's a great solution. I've done some work with that, and it's a great way to get your labels cut at the last minute without a lot of extra setup. It's very efficient. One of the things that we get to in color. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to jump in with these guys gave some great technical responses to that question. I think there's an area that we look at when we're conferring with a customer, which is, let's look at the family of the design, okay? If you look at, imagine you're walking down a grocery store aisle and you're in the beverage aisle and you're looking at 64-ounce packages, and you've got a family of products that's fruit punch, apple, kiwi, strawberry, whatever the flavors may be. Some clients want to keep a consistent background and then have flavor bands that change that are identifiers.
Right.
So, you're asking the question then, okay, well, will we use extended gamut, particularly in this example, to help them differentiate the package just in that flavor band area? Other clients may change the background and the flavor band area. So now you've got a different set of complexity when you're trying to analyze how will this be consistent when you're producing this on press. Instead of all the backgrounds being black and the flavor band changing across the front of the package, now you've got a black, you've got a purple, you've got a green, you've got a yellow, you've got a red. And it's a solid background that consumes the back of that graphic image. Well, that's very different. And then you have, a third option where you've got a big continuous tone area that's, all your fruits that are going to be in the center of that particular label. And some clients may say, well, I'm happy with four-color process. And others may say, well, I've got a lot of orange and greens and grapes or purple colors in this image, I want to use extended gamut to enhance the image and see if I could really make it pop. I mean, we have the ability today with some of the newer software that's out there that we can pinpoint that and say we're going to use extended gamut in the process work and in the flavor band. We're going to use extended gamut just in the flavor band. Or, we're going to try and do something to help with that background image. So the level of consistency you're going to get in your color is really dependent on the family and how the family looks when it's displayed on the shelf. So I don't think there's a simple answer to it. There definitely are downsides to it. I mean, you will lose some consistency versus running a full-strength color. But if your family allows you to hide that because the eye can't catch it, then it's a no-brainer to go to extended gamut. Does that make sense to you guys?
You bet. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think there's a side effect to or a benefit to extended gamut in the process in that you almost gain a third dimension in terms of the pop of the graphics. And, again, if you put yourself in the store and you're 50 feet away from a package, and instead of just seeing, the main type treatment or something like that, the image on the package is clear and visible and identifiable from that far away, that's a bonus. That's a selling point.
Yeah, I think to also add, for those who maybe aren't, you're hearing two, very experienced users of the process, and they've built up a lot of volume where you really start to see a lot of the savings manifest. But as my experience with customers is they're trying to build that extended gamut business, there is a period of time where you don't have enough volume to keep a print condition and a press set up, and you have to stop and tear down and go back to a spotting jobs, so you don't really find those savings. Then there's that rough patch that you'll go through. But for anyone on the call who's listening in, they're starting up, as much as you can keep that one press and that one set print condition, try to go out, as Lou mentioned, and develop some business practices to help drive volume towards that type of a manufacturing setup, then you'll start to see the savings. But if you kind of jump from one job and then a month goes by and then you go back and try to do it again, you're probably going to struggle.
Well, one of the things that, you know, the talk about color brings up is something that, you know, somebody mentioned when we were doing one of the setup calls for this is G7 certification. How does G7 really affect the your color management process? You know, every press is different, so there's individual calibration required. So what are some of the steps you're taking to make sure these colors are going to meet your customer specifications?
Anybody?
Well, I would say, you know, for Hammer, and it depends on the group that we're referring to, but in our particular case, on a, let's say a sheet-fed offset or even web offset, I mean, when you have multiple presses in one given facility, each press is going to print a little differently than the other press. So, you know, at a very basic level, the first thing that G7 does when you go through that certification and become a master printer and identify those conditions that we talked about earlier, each material that runs on each particular press has to get defined, verified, calibrated. You understand that particular piece of equipment, and then you can create sort of a link to what we refer to as a common condition, so that every time we make a new set of plates, you can create those plates so that it will always bring you back to that common condition, which is what your proofing system is calibrated to. If you're a one-press operation, then it's a different story, and it's a lot easier to keep control over that. So whether it's flexo or sheet-fed or web offset or gravure, you know, the more presses you have, the more critical it becomes that you have that tool to help make sure you're always calibrated so that color can be managed.
I think one of the other things about G7, Noel, and not to get too technical, but part of the whole G7 process is the idea of identifying the luminosity and the gray balance of neutrals in the CMYK. And when you're in expanded gamut, one of the advantages to me is that you can push some of the colors without fearing that you're going to push your neutrality or your gray balance out of whack, because that's being supported by the traditional CMY and black value. So I think you've got a little bit more latitude to drop a little bit more of your fifth and sixth and maybe your seventh ink on there without sweating the fact that the whole image is going to incline toward being casted in a certain direction or not.
Yeah, I 100% totally agree with both points of view earlier. You know, it's really about, you know, setting up a system in calibration. You know, if you're going to do extended gamut and you've got multiple presses, pointing at one target, getting your everything operational the same, that willingness to embrace that process control, the single set of conditions and standards, and then being able to set up a separation that at the end of the day, especially on the flexo side, it's more stable. And stability means consistency. And consistency for the brand owner is one of the most important things that they're going to judge you against as a printer to make sure that you're delivering a product that's the same time and time again.
Okay. We're going to shift gears a little bit on the question here, because this next one, I want to have Pete answer this one first, if he would, and then I want to have Lou and Kevin jump in from their perspective as these people are working at print providers. So given the shifts in technology, Pete, let me pop this question up so everyone can see it. Given the shifts in technology, how are you training the new generation of packaging press operators so they're prepared for the jobs that are out there? Do you find they know more but have to work with less than they would like when they go to different companies? And then I want Kevin and Lou to jump in and say, what are they kind of expecting when they bring in new pressmen?
The second part of that question we find is a definite yes. We send a lot of press operators out there who, you know, for 2 years, you know, benefit from the largesse of companies like X-Rite and Esko and whatnot, and they're working with the latest and greatest software, and then they get out in the industry, and it's the old saw that everybody wants, or everybody gets religion, but nobody wants to go to church, you know, that a lot of this stuff isn't actually being practiced. But in preparing these press operators for, really, we're sending, you know, 22-year-old people out there, and we have to be cognizant of the fact that we want them marketable when they're 42. So we're not necessarily training them for the packaging world as it exists today, but the packaging world as we think it's going to be. And so we are very heavy into color management, into process control, and now even into lean theory. You know, quick changeover, especially collaboration between press operators and pre-press people and pre-press and designers, so that there's this idea that everybody's in it together. So those that's my short answer. I'd be interested in what everybody else has to say.
So, Lou and Kevin, from your perspectives, you're the guys who are out there taking in maybe some of these guys from Dunwoody and places like that. What are you finding? How do these new people coming into the workforce, how does that work for you?
So, well, I would say that that's a great question. The lines are blurring between departments, you know, to kind of build off of what Pete's saying. I mean, you used to have a pressman, and his press was, you know, he knew it intimately, and he was independently a lot of times making decisions using his judgment on what he needed to do in order to make that particular image match a press or, a press approval that was done in the past, whatever the companion piece was there on the press to help him, you know, set his goals. And he was very independent, or she was very independent in the past. I think today when we look at the new generation of operator, it's far more collaborative. I mean, they really, you know, they should be able to look at a screen in a pre-press department and say, this is what I see is happening. And there's a lot more teamwork that goes into that calibration that I keep referring to. I mean, everybody has a part in this. And when something breaks down, because you've established some baselines in all the different departments, everybody needs to talk to each other to figure out what's happened in order to get it back to its base. So you're looking at new generation of kids that are coming up to work for us that, you know, can be collaborative, can work in a team, don't feel like they own this press and that's their domain, but they're just a part of something bigger that helps put that product out there very consistently. And, you know, that's tough. It's a changing world. And the technology that comes year in and year out as you continue to invest in this is challenging, because you got to be in a constant learning mode, regardless of what position you have within a printing organization.
That's a terrific answer.
Yeah, and to top that off, press operators are no longer just press operators.
Yeah,
they have to learn to measure color. They're measuring density, dot gain, color, and then they have to know what to do with it now. So we have to provide them the tools and the knowledge of if this, then this. It's no longer as easy as density's low, increase density, dot gain's low, increase dot gain. When you start blending all these colors together, there's many different choices that they can make that can affect the overall look of a single package, let alone the packages that are in combination with each other. So they have to take all this data that they're having to measure press side and make the right decisions on doing what's best for, A, the printing company to print a consistent product, and, B, what's best for the brand owner to give them a package that sells to the consumer and fits inside that system that was set up in the first place. So that's a very different press operator than what was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And then, you know, from where we look, we also have different pre-press operators. You know, we, from pre-press, the successive extended gamut system a lot of times is based on the front end. You want to do all your color work, all your adjustments, all the revisions as far upstream as possible so you don't interfere with the efficiencies that are gained downstream by the combos, the eliminated setups, the reduction in ink waste, the reduction in inventory. So we try to handle that all up on the front end, and it takes a very different prepress operator to understand that any decision they make, what is the impact in color, what is the impact on the TIFF file, how does that TIFF file impact the plate, how is that plate going to in fact impact how it's going to print on the press. And teaching those people that you have to teach every single piece of the process downstream from where they're sitting so they understand by what decision they make, how does that impact what's going to happen downstream, and get them to right, make the right decision on the front end.
Okay. Tagging onto that, Noel, if I could just add one thing. If you look at the modern prepress systems, too, there's all kinds of soft-proofing capabilities. And, we're showing prepress students now how to look at a flexo-plate simulation of what their separation is going to look like and actually make the same kind of judgment calls as the person who used to make the plate would look for, in evaluating the plate, so that we know going into it before we ever manufacture the plate that it's not going to, end up with drizzle dot or any kind of mechanical issues that are going to be problematic on press.
Okay.
So, again, that speaks to collaboration.
Yeah, that really does. Now, you were talking a moment ago, I think it was Lou talking, about the software and things they need to know how to use, the tools they need to know how to use. We have about 12, 13 minutes left, and I have a couple more questions I want to ask, and there's a couple from the audience. So very quickly, what are some of the software and tools that you find are particularly effective in your shop to be able to help the press operators and pre-press guys do their job effectively?
I mean, at Hammer, we use ESCO software and in our pre-press department, and we began with the Equinox process for 7 color separations. So we use an orange, green, and violet that's added to our 4 color process. And, we've had some huge success with those tools. I mean, we have one client that runs over 2,300 different items, and everything is separated in that extended gamut that we've created using that tool. So as far as I could say to this point, it's been a big success for us, and I'm sure that it will continue to evolve, and, there are other software packages that will also evolve as the market moves this direction.
Well, another thing that's happening, and someone just mentioned this to me the other day in conversation, is how is the cloud playing into color gamut and proofing? And from your experience, guys, is this really important today, or is using the cloud something a package printer can put off for a while, or is it something either of you at Hammer or at CyberPress are using the cloud for proofing?
It's certainly coming into play on the design side. But I'll defer to, some of the other panelists here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, from the design side, yeah, definitely. From the approval chain process, definitely. When you get into, crunching numbers, that's all done locally. We like to keep that under control. As we get into multi-site management, yes, we are using the cloud to generate proofs in one place, but then output them on devices around in different parts of the country. I think, yes, cloud is very important to that. So you have critical control over the color, over the file, and then you've got the output devices that are all calibrated to the same standard. That way you know you can generate a proof from one point and it be just as accurate, whether it's, at different parts of the country, because at the end of the day, we're trying to help manage timelines, getting those, the increase the cycle time, get it onto the store shelf a lot faster than your competitor.
Okay. One of the audience asked a question, and it was one I was going to ask anyway, is when someone's looking at buying a new press for whatever kind, for package printing, How should you go about measuring the ROI of a new press and being able to expand that color gamut that he offers customers? How do you manage the cost justification there? Because obviously it's a big investment for these machines.
Yeah, for the highest end devices, it's a really big investment, and you really have to weigh a bunch of different factors, and a lot of it's very hard to put numbers to. I mean,
yeah.
The ink savings, yes. The elimination of setups, yes. You little bit of a decreased plate cost for Flexo as you start to combo stuff together. So there's all those benefits of doing that, but then there's all sorts of costs that it's hard to put numbers to, like choosing blue versus violet. One creates a bigger gamut than the other, but one may allow you to print a little bit more consistent of a blue than a violet could. So then you have to figure out, you know, in my printing process, how important is consistency to overall gamut? And how do I achieve and understand what that cost is? That's very, very hard to do. But
yeah.
We've seen extended gamut be produced on some of the best machines, and we've seen it produced on some of the not well-conditioned machines. But if you keep the process in line and you keep that machine up to shape, you don't need the top-of-the-line equipment. It helps to run the speed, and it helps to do the faster changeovers, and it helps to do all this stuff. But you don't necessarily have to have it, but you have to be able to put the numbers to the benefits that you're going to get by doing this system.
Okay, good. Thank you. Now, I have a couple more audience questions here. Two of them are from Anastasia, and she has a question for Hammer, and she has a question for Kevin Borkman. So the one for Hammer is, how does Hammer generate proofs for extended gamut? Do you make an inkjet proof or a dot proof for approval?
We use an inkjet. I mean, we've calibrated our inkjet systems through our G7 process. Everything is matched up, and we go through the process on a regular basis with our quality management system to make sure that what we're outputting on that proofing system matches up with that particular press on that particular material. So it's a never-ending cycle. I mean, I wish I could say you do it once and, you know, you're calibrated and you're all good, but the reality is these are machines and they're moving, and, you know, as things move, they need to be regularly checked and get recalibrated. So it's an ongoing process.
Okay, Anastasia also has a question for Kevin, and it's also about proofing. She's saying, I watched your presentation about proofing the gold standard. And she asked, what is your prediction for the future of dot proofing?
For dot proofing?
Yeah.
On the traditional dot proofer itself, that's a hard one. The cost per proof has always been more than what we see in inkjet, and you don't see many people developing the technology to improve that platform anymore. But it does have some distinct advantages where you can put a proof on an actual substrate. Where we've seen the most success, though, is in inkjet. And as inkjet gets better, as the resolution keeps on increasing, as the gamut keeps on increasing, I mean, the inkjet is going to be the way to go. Cost per proof is a lot less. And now these different vendors like GMG, like CGS, like Kodak, like EFI, they are all developing ways to do dot proofs with inkjet. And yes, you sacrifice some gamut, which we don't really have the luxury of doing right now, but you do maintain some of the consistency, some of the lower cost for proofs. So I think everybody would agree that while dot proofs have been good for a while and they will continue to be in our industry, inkjet is the wave of the future, and that's where all the technology is going. Between that and soft proofing on the monitor, which has a much bigger gamut than anything we ever print on, that's where the industry is going.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. We have some other questions here from the audience. There's just lots of them coming in. This one's from Paris Balance. How do you UV inks on non-porous foils and plastic substrates have higher optical densities than on porous substrates? Anyone want to take that
one?
Can
you read that one again, Noel? I didn't...
Sure. How do UV inks on non-porous substrates like foils and plastics have higher optical densities than on porous substrates?
You know, that's kind of self-evident, isn't it, because they're not sinking down into the substrate itself because the substrate isn't porous, because they're sitting up on top of the substrate, they have a higher density, and because they're flash cured right away, you can run a higher density of ink without fear of that, you know, added dot gain or the ink running around before it finally sets.
Okay. Let's see. There's several people keep asking questions, and I'm trying to jump around to some different folks. Here's an interesting one. Anyone can jump on this one if they want. We have neon dye sublimation inks at my company. The color gamut is 30% to 40% wider than normal sublimation inks. How do you see dye sublimation inks fitting into packaging markets?
I mean, if you can print with the inks and they adhere to the substrate and you've got the bond strength and the inks don't, you can run them at speed that packaging needs, and I mean, anything's possible. They just have to meet the requirements set forth by the process downstream, like your different laminations. They have to hold up to extreme temperatures in extrusion laminations. They have to handle the solvents. In adhesive lamination processes, they have to bond, they have to seal on the packaging machine. So if they meet these requirements, yes, then it's possible.
And also the end-use application, right, if they're going to be on frozen foods as an example, right, they need to adhere to those requirements.
Okay. Anything any of you guys would like to add to sort of wrap this up or make any final comments?
Yeah, I guess I would like to jump in and just say that, you know, for everybody that's listening, if you're representing a brand or a consumer product company, that don't lock the definition of extended color gamut into necessarily a fixed ink set that we define for you, because a lot of times we forget that, let's say we're using 6-color process or even 7-color process, well, if you're running a 10-color FlexoPress, you still have other units, and you can still have a corporate color or you know, some particular gold or something else as a component of that design. So, you know, you can go beyond extended gamut and have this hybrid where you're doing something that's unique for your brand but still taking advantage of the extended color gamut. So it's just one of those things when we're talking to people, they just think, well, we're going to work in 7 colors. It's all we're going to work in. We can't do anything more. And you're like, no. You know, you can still have that 1 or 2 extra colors, but we want to do these flavor bands or we want to do these other areas using the extended gamut process. And it still gives us those advantages that Kevin talked about where, okay, now we've got 7 units that are fixed with this color. We're just doing plate changes. You know, we're doing this and we're maximizing the efficiency of the changeovers.
Great, great advice. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we are closing in on the end here. We're about out of time. So on behalf of Package Printing and Printing Impressions Magazine and Sun Chemical, our sponsor today, I'd like to thank you, everybody, for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. This whole session today will be available within a day or two. You'll probably get a link to it if you've already signed up. So you'll get a link to it so you can listen to a replay or share it with anybody else. I want to thank all the participants, Pete and Lou and Steve and Kevin, for joining in and participating today and helping make this a good webinar. And to the audience, if there is an exit survey, if you get an exit survey request on your screen when we're wrapping up, please fill that out. We'd be grateful to hear your feedback because it influences the kind of webinars we bring to you in the future, and I hope to see you at the next Printing Impressions Group webinar. So thank you all very much, and look forward to talking to you again.